Hello, I'm Priya Bates, president of Inner Strength Communication based in Toronto, Canada.
And I'm Advita Patel, director of Comms Rebel based in Manchester, UK.
And we're co-founders of A Leader Like Me.
We've also recently published a book with Kogan Page called Building a Culture of Inclusivity, Effective Internal Communication for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion.
In season three of our podcast, we will introduce you to diverse voices where we talk about the role of communication personally and professionally in building inclusive cultures.
We hope you enjoy our podcast.
So today we're talking to Zahid Mubarak. He is from Pakistan and he helps people unleash their potential as CEO of HR Metrics. Now, I was introduced to Zahid through the GDEIB, which is the Global Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Benchmarks, and found out that he's been very involved in building that relationship with human resources through the GDEIB framework. So I thought it would be really great. So much of the work that we do in communications is with the HR leaders in our organizations, and DEI tends to be where HR is where DEI tends to fall in terms of organizational structure. Like that's what we've seen in organizations that we've worked in. So what I'd like to start with first is Zahid, introduce yourself to us, to our audience.
Thank you so much, Priya, for this opportunity. As you already mentioned my name, I'm running my own company. It's called HR Metrics, from where we are focusing on three areas. One is the people analytics. On that front, fortunately, I'm one of those 10 pioneer members who were able to create the global committee for developing the HR standards. It's called ISO Technical Committee 260. So in a past span of more than a 10 years, we were able to create 29 global different standards. And one of them is a global standard on the people analytics, which is called ISO 30414. It's a very hot standard now worldwide being used by the companies. Other than that, I'm the SHRM partner for Pakistan. SHRM is the world's largest HR association, and it has developed own competency framework. And I partner, again, it's our affiliation is more than a decade. And the third area of expertise is the diversity, equity, and inclusion, where I served as two tenures on the Center for Global Inclusion as a board director. And then also the most recent version, the GDEIB 2021 version, which was developed by three co-authors with the input of 112 global experts. So I'm one of the 12 global experts. So this is all about myself. Thank you.
Thanks, Zahid. It's so fascinating to hear your experience and journey. Would you be able to tell us a little bit more about how did you get started with the work you do around inclusion and equity and diversity? And the reason I ask this question is because, as Priya mentioned at the start, in our experience and the work we do as communication professionals, we do work with HR professionals a lot of the time. And some of the conversations we've had with some HR professionals is understanding how they can bring this inclusive culture into their organization and build that knowledge. Because there's an assumption, isn't there, that HR should know automatically how to build this kind of inclusive world that they're in, but that's not always the case. So the work that you've done with the GDEIB framework and the work that you do with the SHRM, S-H-R-M, what does that stand for, by the way, Zahid? Is that an acronym for the S-H-R-M?
S-H-R-M is the Society for Human Resource Management.
Okay.
World largest HR associations, more than 70 years of the life, having 325,000 members in 165 countries, and it is impacting life of more than 325 million people.
Wow, that is a huge network. So on that then, so what? How did you get involved in the EDI and the DEI element of all of this? What made you kind of put your experience and talent forward?
So one of the, I think, key reason was the overarching driver of the D&I, that's, I would say, the Sustainable Development Goals, I think, which have been ratified by the most of the countries. So that was, I think, a key motivation for me to build a purpose in what I do, and then connect that purpose with the organization that I serve. So it was fortunately that in 2015, I came across Judy O'Meara, who I think was the creator of the GDIB, one of the founder member of the Center for Global Inclusion. And I met her during a conference by the SHRM that you already talked about in Las Vegas. So we met each other, and she was able to, you know, communicate me more information about the diversity and inclusion. So there it clicked my mind. I tried to understand it more. I, you know, tried to import the framework to my own organization that I was serving. And by now I can say with, I think, a lot of honor that I have served 65 multinational and local companies in Pakistan for using the GDEIB in a very, very, very structured way. That means that they're able to determine where do they stand, where do they want to go in a very measurable term. So that's the, I would say, call it a short description of the journey that I had.
Well, and that's something that I was really impressed with the GDEIB standard. And we, again, we learned about it when we were researching the book, and we were looking for frameworks, and we were introduced or recommended to the organization. And I looked at the materials, and I loved the structure of it. I loved the fact that you could, there was a lot of open source, free source material that's available to organizations globally. And that the most important part for me, Zahid, was the fact that they brought in 112 experts. And as a, you know, a person of color, you know, I looked at that. There's so much of that expertise right now we're seeing that is created without asking a diverse group of individuals. And here you saw these 112 experts that you looked through the list and you thought they represented different countries, they represented different points of view, they were representative.
Absolutely.
And that must have been amazing being part of that effort. What did that feel like and what did that look like?
I think that was, I would say, the most exciting part of it, because I have been involved in the development process. So in our own experience, we have so many blind spots. We are not able to look at the things from a different perspective. So when you have the people with the different nationalities, the different time zones, the different abilities, they bring in their perspective. So it's a very well-rounded document. Right? So in that context, I would say, yes, that's the beauty of the GDIB. And since it's a public source, publicly available, because the Center for Global Inclusion is a nonprofit organization, and the organizations can benefit from this source. I would say still there's not much awareness about it because within the center, we call it a best kept secret in a way that it's a wonderful document in a very structured way. And you talked about the framework. That's true that if you talk about the other professions like the finance, like the medical, the engineering, there's a framework around which the things happen. But in the social sciences, the area, the HR, the D&I, people tend to do whatever they feel like. There's no objective way of doing it. And that's why where I think the GDIB comes in.
I love how you said it's the world's best kept secret, because Priya and I have been involved in this world for, you know, for a number of years. And when we were doing the research for our book, it was one of the first times we came across it. And it's incredible. You know, as Priya said, shared, it's the fact that there's so much open, free advice available, and the framework is quite clear. You've done the due diligence around it, and it gives you clear steps on how you want to do it. I mean, we've got a chapter dedicated to the framework very kindly with permission. What I'd like to ask you, Zahid, is do you think, so one of the biggest pieces of feedback I receive, and I'm sure Priya does as well in the work that she does, is that the DEI kind of gusto, which started a few years ago, is now, the light is now dimming, and people are a bit tired, they're a bit exhausted, they are switching off from various things. There's a lot of very strong opinions about certain things being, you know, being carried away. What's your thoughts on this narrative that's being shared right now about maybe some organizations have gone too far, or, you know, and those organizations that have put themselves out there are being attacked, and then they're retracting, and then they're deciding not to do anything. Do you have any thoughts on whether DEI is
this is an interesting question. Yeah. So I would say if you talk in numbers term, it's true, because currently the statistics show that post-COVID, the turnover of the female is 1.5 times the men, right? Oh, wow. That's not a positive indicator. This is one of the global, you can say, finding that has come up on the basis of some of the researches. But at the same time, I have a different opinion. My opinion is that there are so many things happening around the world, and not everything is within the control of the enterprise. Like you have the COVID situations, you know, that the wars taking place in the different parts of the world, the global recessions, you know, the currency fluctuations. So D&I needs some space for the organization, which you can call some kind of reasonable accommodation or some kind of affirmative actions to bring the underrepresented groups into the mainstream. So even if you have a desire, you need resources for it. So I'm optimistic that, yes, there is a dip, but I don't see any kind of, you can say, issue with the intentions. Because as I said, I've dealt with 65 companies. Out of it, at least 49 companies, I'm actively involved. And I can clearly say that an organization which was previously dealing with at least 4 or 5 categories of the GDIB, they are aiming for 10. Anybody who was using at least 10 categories in the organization, they are aiming for 15. So in my personal experience, there is a progression. But if you see on the larger canvas, yes, there's a drop. But I think this we should be able to see the thing as a part of the evolution, not the spontaneous dip. Because if we are able to see this trend over a larger period of time, I think that would be a more pragmatic judgment to see if there's a real decline. Otherwise, momentarily, sometimes the things spike, sometimes the things go down. So it would be, in my view, a true premature judgment of the perception about the D&I that people are not taking it seriously. One more thing I want to emphasize, whether the people like it or not, now there are global pressures, not just in the form of nice to have, but must to have. There's a regulation in the Europe, which is called the CSRD, Corporate Social Responsibility Directive. It's a law now, and the companies are under the obligation to comply with the D&I, the growth and the diversity and inclusion. And that's CSRD is not just applicable to the Europe. Any US company doing business in the Europe would have to comply with it. It's got one subsidiary. The rest of the world, they always follow the good trend. So I would say going forward, there are more pressures, more demand for it. And I think people are taking it positively. But as you said, respecting the overall numbers, a game that is there, yes, there's an issue over there.
And I think it's great to put it in perspective. One of our mantras for Advita and I is progress, not perfect, right? Yeah. That this space is changing. Even the GD, what I was really impressed with the GDIB standard was that it is looked at every 5 years. So there is an understanding that things change and there are things that get updated and conversations change and focuses change. And I love that idea that we're moving forward. And I think when we do take that step back, we see there is progress, and that's something we want to focus on. I'd be curious, you know, when it comes to the work that you do in the D&I space, you were talking about the global companies and different standards that are happening around the world that people are complying with. What are the similarities and differences you see with the approaches to DEI, in North America versus Europe versus Pakistan and Asia? What are you seeing? Are there more similarities than differences? What do you pay attention to?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I always look at the things from that perspective once I travel abroad or once I interact with the people with the different nationalities. I would say in the normal times, the focus is more or less same, because in my organizations, though that in my orbit or worldwide, there's a tremendous focus on the gender, right? This is true worldwide. There's a focus on the having more female in the workplace. But if in some of the areas, I would say, are influenced by some of the things that happen around. For example, in the US, the Black Lives Matters came up on the basis of an issue. And then racial diversity came in the spotlight that people started focusing on that. So somewhere in the different parts of the world, particularly in North America, like there was a kind of a diversion on the D&I because of some of the issue that was there. But otherwise, more or less, if I look at the top 10 trends, that's the gender diversity, the disability inclusion. And I think by now the people are also recognizing the religious diversity as well. But the GDIB talks about the D&I dimensions in the form of 28 different dimensions. Like they're micro things, the thought process, the ethnicity, the religion, the color. But I would say those are the small threads. And on a broader term, the trends are more or less the same. And there's even the focus is same. For example, currently I also work with the women leaders at the board level. So this is a movement more or less across the globe. 2 days ago, I was reading in a report, the KPMG said that half of the currently the deals on the merger and acquisitions are failing because the companies are not able to qualify on the ESG. And within the ESG, the social aspect is a predominant factor over there. So the focus is more or less because I would say that we are operating in a globalized environment. So whether a company does it because they buy it or another company that do it because of the fashion, whatever reason is, the more or less the things are same.
That's really interesting and such fascinating insight, because I feel sometimes we can be so tunnel visioned in what we believe is going on in our kind of own orbit, as you said, Zahid, and we don't look at the broader picture of some of the changes that are happening. And I think Priya and I often chat about there's a kind of group of people who feel that change is going too quickly and mm-hmm. they need time. And then there's a group of people who feel that we're not changing quick enough, which can cause conflict, as you may have recognized in some of your organizations that you support. One of the questions I wanted to ask was around communication and inclusion and diversity. In your experience and the work that you have done with communication professionals, where do you see that link in terms of how can communication professionals be more involved in helping HR and EDI leaders deliver against some of the key objectives that has been set along these quite, substantial objectives, to be honest? Like you clearly said, it's not a nice thing to do. It's a law in some areas, and it's a standard that you do have to achieve, arrive to. And same with the report that you read with KPMG, some of the mergers and acquisitions are failing because they're not aligning with the ESG stuff. So it's impacting profitability and sustainability of a business. Priya and I believe, as we discussed with you about, communications play a big part in that. But where, in terms of reality, where do you see that? Is there a place for us to belong in here?
Very important area. First, on account of the growth of the D&I, I am a firm believer that if you want to do things in a sustainable way, you have to evolve. Because evolution works, the revolution does not work, right? So the things have to evolve naturally, and we have to see the things in the broader context, number one. Regarding the communication, again, I'm convinced, somebody said that the biggest illusion about the communication is that it has taken place. Most of the time we think it's a communication, but it could be a advertising, but not the communication. The communication is that your message is understood and there's an acknowledgement. Whether the positive or the negative feedback, but there's an element of feedback. The organization, I think by now, are realizing the importance of communication. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that organizations are departing from publishing just the annual report around finances to the sustainability report.
Yeah.
Although the numbers of the organizations are very thin, I don't need the explicit numbers with me, but there's a challenge over there as well, because the organization, they want to look good. They want to be ESG compliant somewhere. There's a terminology, I think, which is a key consideration for the investors, called the greenwashing, where the organization, they tend to be good on the various fronts. Actually, they've got nothing. Mm-hmm. That is where I think the metrics come in. So a clear descriptor of what you're doing, and what the evidence are you having to make sure to demonstrate? Because if you say that you are a diverse organization, show it. If you're talking from the gender perspectives, tell us what is the exact representation of women at the board level, at the C-suite level, at the managerial level, at the entry level. That, I think, facts and figures would tell the story instead of a long narrative. So
yeah,
there are both sides. I'm always looking at the positive aspect, how the things evolve. So I would say things are very encouraging. By now, I think the people are getting to buy the sustainable development goals. In the early stage, when they were formed, people talking about, they had no clarity. What are the actions? What are the things they have to mobilize? But now they're trying to see the value out of it, because organizations which are sustainable, which are performing in the longer run, they're using this path. So I think in that context, there's always a lot of possibility of growth on the D&I, and communication is a key thing. And I think organizations have to pay more and more pay attention to it, because currently, day after tomorrow, I've got another webinar on the CSRD, Corporate Social Responsibility Directive. Organizations have to spend a significant amount of money on developing the communication, which should be able to convince all the stakeholders, not just the shareholders, that the organization is acting in a responsible way. They're able to take care of the interest of the shareholders, the customers, the employees, the regulators. And that's where I think the overall communication comes in.
Now, you talk about, like, your organization is HR metrics. And one of the things, you know, we're big measurement fans, even from a communication perspective. What metrics mean, what we measure, what matters. And when we measure, we are accountable. We found, and I don't know if you see this, is, are there people who are afraid to measure because they don't want to be held accountable?
I think this is true. And I would relate it to a normal phenomenon that if you find anybody a player, the player always prefer a score, right? The score is preferred by this player. Because, for example, if you ask any student, what's your grade? And average person would say good grade. A brilliant person would say, okay, 3.54. So when you talk in the numbers term, it's more authentic, right? Because the definition of good and bad, anybody can have any understanding. But when you talk in numbers, it's very explicit. Although numbers also need some qualitative description as well. So this is one. The HR metrics broadly looks at the measurement from a three perspective. We have to take into account the key principle that there are stakeholders who are interested in the performance of the HR. Those stakeholders start from the regulators, your board of directors, the CFO, the top management. So we need to have metrics to satisfy and give realistic information to the various stakeholders. So I broadly basically classify the metrics into three segments. One we call the efficiency metrics, which basically indicate the performance of the function. For example, you're looking at the cost, you're looking at the time, you're looking at the volume of what you're doing. That's in technical term, they call the efficiency metrics. The other one is the effectiveness metrics, right? Where you want to see that whatever you're doing, does it serve the purpose of the stakeholders? For example, you are developing the capacity of an organization. So organization might say, okay, we have X number of training hours, we spend X amount of money, we spend train X number of people, but does it really produce develop the people, and they're able to use the framework in their organization, and does it really leverage the performance? That's the key question. That's called, we call it the effectiveness, right? In terms of the literature description of it. And then there are relevant metrics for it. The third and the most important is your impact and the ROI. In the past, the concept was the HR is more of a fluffy subject. It's a soft subject. There's nothing soft in the business. Everything consumes money, and whenever you spend money, it becomes a hard subject, and to justify the spendings to the stakeholders and ask for more funds in the future, you need to have better, clear returns, a clear, not only cash outflow, but cash inflow. That's called the ROI. And by now, we don't have to invent the wheel. As I already talked about, there's a global standard called ISO 30414. It's being used by the big companies. There is a mechanism where you can, on a paper, demonstrate, okay, this is the inflow in the HR. and this is the outflow. So that becomes a more of a convincing case for the, or call it the business case for the organization for the next time to decide whether you invest in a function or not. So broadly, coming to your question, looking at it from an efficiency perspective, the effectiveness perspective, the impact. There are stakeholders who are interested in the various information, but overarching thing, I'm sure as a business guy, if you are, you're not a social centric organization, you are in a business organization, you would like to see the impact and the outcome. Even in the social organization, 2 days ago, we were having a webinar with the CEO. He had a clear metric for the bottom line of organization, you know, which was a social oriented organization. So connecting the mission of the HR with the bottom line indicator in the measurable terms, I think that's the key takeaway for the from the HR metrics perspective.
That's a, you know, that is music to our ears, Zahid. As Priya said, both of us are measurement, you know, through and through, because you, what you, you clearly said, you need to be able to track what you're doing to see the impact it's having before you can make the investment you need to make. And at the moment, you know, your gut and your intuition is, there's nothing wrong with that, but you need to back it up with your data set. And, you know, the what I believe is good and what you believe is good and what the CEO may believe is good will be all on very different tracks to your point. So you need to be very clear on what is good for this organization. So absolutely, you know, I loved how you broke that down. I think anyone who's listening should recommend, check out some of the work that you're doing in this space. And if you are struggling with HR metrics, to find, you know, to connect with you and learn more, because I think that's, it's an imperative part of the work that we do. On that subject, staying on that subject a little bit, what advice would you give to either a communication professional who's listening, or a leader or a HR professional who is just feeling stuck right now? So the leadership are not really listening to what they're saying. They're not having the impact they would like to have. There's chaos around the organization in sense of lots of comms is going in and out. And to your point, you shared just before, you know, if people are not acknowledging the communication, then what's the purpose of that communication? What advice do you have to those individuals who are just feeling a bit stuck and maybe a bit downtrodden about everything that's going on? Do you have any advice on where they can start and what they need to do?
Yeah, I'll share my own experience. Fortunately, I had the honor of communicating in a face-to-face environment on the invitation with a country like, and the organization like the American National Standard, the British Standard, the French Standard, the German Standard, the Italy Standards, Indonesia Standards, Singapore Standards, so many organizations in a face-to-face environment. People also complain that usually the HR is not being heard at the board level or the CEO level. I never experienced, because I strongly believe that you should speak the language of the person to whom you're talking. If you're talking to the board, don't talk about the process. The board is interested in the takeaway, the outcomes, you know, the ROI. If you're talking about the to your line manager, talk about the quality. How does it serve their problem? They are not interested in the ROI. They're interested in the retention. They're interested in the performance. They're interested in the engagement. They're interested in the more teamwork. So identifying the pain point of somebody to whom you're talking, the number one, in my view, that's what I learned, is the key driver of the success. So understand the pain point of the person to whom you're talking. Do not try to impress somebody with the knowledge that you have. I have got 3 global certifications, like the GPHR, where I had to learn the regulation of the US, the China, the Canada, the Europe, the UK. But I don't use the technical jargons with anybody in the business. They're not concerned about my certification. They're interested how I can add value to them. Bro, understanding your audience, knowing the business case for what you're talking about, and using the language for whom you're talking is, I should say, a recipe for success. And I never found any difficulty in communicating with any board director, the CEO, even with the students. The academy, when you know that your client or the target perspective, they're different, you use their language. I think that's how I would, and you, I would say, know it better because you are the expert in communication. So I think, but I would be very happy if you can share your thoughts on how do you think is that, you know, key for success in communication, because I also want to use it an opportunity for my self-development.
You know, what you shared there, Zahid, is spot on in terms of direct personalizing the way you communicate to your stakeholders. I think we can sometimes fall into this trap of broadcasting what we believe we need to share. You made a very valid point about sometimes when we're feeling a bit vulnerable and we're not being taken seriously, we start showing off about our credentials and talking in technical terminologies that is just going to switch off those leaders and the line managers and the stakeholders that we need to speak with on a daily basis. You know, my advice is always very similar to yours, is what is the problem that you're trying to solve for them, and how are you going to help them understand how you can help them, and keep them in front of mind, and then adjust your methodology, if you want to call it that, to that stakeholder. Because you're spot on. You know, the board don't care about tactics. They're not interested in you spoke to this person there and you spoke to that person there. They want to know, how much money is this going to cost me? How much return on investment is this all about? What impact are you having? And are we going to succeed next year? Is this going to help us succeed and achieve our mission and vision that we have? And the same in line managers. You know, they you know, in my experience, they do care about whether the organization is going to stay sustainable, but what can I personally do? What's in it for me? What do I need to do to contribute? What value do I bring on that? That's you know, and I would say dashboards. You know, as I said, Priya and I are both huge fans of dashboards. If you can show your leadership team the metrics, you know, the impact, the efficiencies, the effectiveness that you're having, all of a sudden the conversation turns. And it's so funny hearing you say, some of the HR professionals that you speak with say, we don't have a seat at the table, we're not being heard. That is exactly the conversation we have in the communications world. Like, Priya,
Absolutely. We talk about it. Why can't we get any respect? Why can't we get the seat at the table? It's a conversation that's been going on I've been doing this for 30 years. And you know, I've never had that issue. I love speaking with leaders, and I love speaking with colleagues. And we can speak in their language and understand what they need in order for us to move to action. Right? Because ultimately, that's what we're looking for. That often when Avid and I get brought in to any organizational change effort, including DEI, it's because they've created the plan and they're experiencing resistance or apathy from the employees. And the reason they are experiencing that resistance or apathy is they fail to communicate. Or communicate properly in order to help people understand. Because I find that we, you know, one of the things we talk about is really understand the why for DEI. What does that mean to your organization in the organization's terms, you know, and the colleagues' terms? Really understand what your foundations are, because it's amazing to me when I go into organizations and we never start with what are our values, what's our mission, what's our vision, who are we and what do we stand for? Because when we start with that, that's part of the corporate story and the organizational story. I've worked with a lot of corporations, so I always tend to say corporate, but if the organizational story is based on a foundation that we can build upon. And most of that language that you find there that tends to sit on a wall or be in some policy isn't used on a regular basis to drive people towards behavior. And I think that's the big opportunity, connecting those dots in a way that makes sense to people, that doesn't start from nowhere. It actually starts from a really solid foundation that we can build from.
Very rightly said.
We've had a great conversation. You know, I am always impressed every single time I talk to you, Zaheed, about how much information and how you're developing your understanding every day by understanding and having these conversations with leaders around the world. And I think it's amazing to enhance our perspective. It's knowing that we always have something to learn, and that you're also driving that learning in your profession, in HR. And I really appreciate that. One of the things I'm going to be presenting at is a conference that you're delivering on DEI certification. And so before we finish, I want you to have a chance to tell us what you do there and what that conference is available for.
So as you already mentioned about the GDEIB, which is a framework the framework tells us in a very structured way that what needs to be done. So there are 15 different categories, and within every category, there are 5 levels of readiness for the organization. That's called the inactive. It means nothing is happening in the D&I, the reactive mode, where something is happening, but it's on the pressures from the regulators. The organization has not bought the D&I. There's a proactive stage where the organization starts doing something systematically, but they're in a state of infancy. The fourth one is a progressive, when they're doing it for quite some time, and now they have the clear results, right? And the fifth one is the best practice, when they are known in the industry for the D&I. So in order to execute, there are 275 benchmarks. So what we do, that we invite the global experts to share their perspective, and they are able to explain the at least 2 to 3 benchmarks and their connotations in the globalized environment. For example, on the communication is one of the categories. So there are at least 15 to 20 benchmarks, and you are able to explain at least 2 to 3 benchmarks with your perspective, a globalized perspective, and relevant examples. So how you have seen the organization, how supported the organization's implementing those things, not exactly according to the benchmark, but the spirit of the benchmarks, right? For example, you said that the stakeholders' engagement, they require a clear communication. So what kind of tools are there to communicate with the stakeholders? What are the current trends? How many organizations are doing it in your experience? So this is the global perspective. At the same time, we bring in one practitioner from the local market who is usually one of the award winner company, because in the every year we do the GDIB awards, where the organizations, they go through a rigorous process of evaluation through third party, and there's an assessment on their readiness, and based on their performance, they are declared as winners in 5 categories: inactive, reactive, proactive, progressive, and the best practice. So we pluck people who demonstrate the best practice or at least progressive practices, and we bring them to the session to educate others what is happening in their organization. So I would call it, in the nutshell, a good blend of what is happening worldwide, what is happening at the country level, and how the people can relate to each other. And this, I think, becomes the baseline for them to build their performance, because this is an opportunity for the collective learning. So that's how we manage this program. In the, at least 15 total different sessions. We do every week 2 sessions. So in a month, in a span of almost 2 months, we're going to complete it. So that's about this program.
Great. And we'll make sure that all that information is available in the show notes so that you can take a look at what is available through Zahid's organization and the education opportunities that he leads as well.
Sure.
So thank you so much, Zahid, for spending the time with us. We've learned so much. We now know that there is a resource whenever we have a question from an HR perspective. You may get a call from us.
Yeah, I think Zahid's going to regret the day he connected with both of us, Priya.
I'm quite humbled and happy to support. I myself a constant learner. So thank you once again, Priya and Advija, for your engaging conversation, and happy to be involved whenever there's a future opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to our A Leader Like Me podcast.
Find us on socials and at aleaderlikeme.com.
And please do read our new book, Building a Culture of Inclusivity, Effective Internal Communication for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. You can buy our book from anywhere you buy your books online.
And a discount code for our listeners is available. Just use the code ALLME20 at www.koganpage.com.
And please do reach out for us for any internal communication, change management, and DEI communication training and support your organization needs.
We have keynotes, workshops, and consulting programs available. Email us at info@aleaderlikeme.com.